Welcome into another Daily Wager Extra podcast. I'm Doug Kazarian, joined this morning in a moment with Mackenzie Kramer. ESPN researcher extraordinaire. We're going to recap this week, obviously, like we normally do. Hope everyone had a fantastic holiday weekend. Obviously, some curveballs sent our way on Thanksgiving and then into the weekend. But let's get this thing going with Mackenzie. And, you know, for the first time in a while, we have home teams actually responding and covering.
I feel like every time we're on the show, we talk about the exact same two things, which are how well road teams have done and how well underdogs have done. Well, just for the second time all year, home teams are going to end with a winning record this week against the spread. 9-5 against the spread entering Monday night. The only other time they had a winning record was back in week 7. They're still only covering 43% of the time on the season, which is on track to be the worst mark in the Super Bowl era, which goes back to 1966. But for the first time in a long time, home teams finally having a good week.
You know, a couple of them stand out, and, you know, we can start with the Patriots because they are right now the toast of the town, 6 straight wins and covers. This line steamed all the way up. I saw some 7.5s before kickoff yesterday, and look, I watched the whole game. I actually bet the Pats. I'm not saying they were lucky to cover because they won by 23, but there were a couple huge plays. The running backs busted loose, and then you get the ball punched out. So it could have been a lot closer, and then, you know, Brable ended up having to go for it on fourth down on his own 20, fourth and long. So it could have very easily been a non-cover, maybe a victory. But they get there, and that's how they've been rolling along, and that sets up a big matchup next week with the Bills. But the Pats are just, you know, they've totally flipped the switch.
I mean, the Patriots have now won 6 in a row, covering all of them with a plus 148-point differential, which is pretty wild to think about. So they're winning games by over 24 points per game in that span. It's the 7th highest point differential during a 6-game win streak in the Super Bowl era. They move up to the 2 seed in the AFC right now behind the Ravens after beating Tennessee. Tennessee had been 5-0 outright as an underdog this season, but they just have so many injuries on offense. It's kind of like the Saints in that sense, where it's like you want to bet on them because of the team, the record, the name, the coach, and all that, but they're just not the same team on paper with the Tennessee missing so many guys on offense right now.
Yeah, A.J. Brown was out in addition to, of course, Derrick Henry. And that showed. I mean, look, they had some speed. They had a big touchdown run right before halftime and then a long run. But it's just, you know, the ball security, and then Tannehill was limited. And the Patriots obviously have been flipped the switch on defense. We talked about it last week, playing more zone. Really an impressive run right now with New England. We'll see. The true litmus test will be the Monday Nighter against Buffalo. That game is at the Ralph, and it's a 3-point, you know, Buffalo line, which – very interesting. This line probably could have been 6 a few weeks ago, but the Bills did bounce back. That was the nightcap on Thanksgiving, just dominated the Saints, who were really limited, and no Kamara. Trevor Siemian was, well, he was Trevor Siemian, and the Bills came to play, and they really dominated a low-scoring game. Not much to report there. The Bears-Lions was as advertised. Kind of a fun game, as ugly as it was. Lions remain winless as the Bears kick a field goal as time expires in the final seconds. And Detroit 0-10-1. But depending on what line you had, some people covered if they got the number earlier. But are we using 2.5 as the closing number?
Yes, we are. Yeah. So Lions still get the covers. They're now 7-4 against the spread this year, even though they're 0-10-1 outright, which is just crazy to think about that. The Lions have been one of the more profitable teams in the NFL, even though they still haven't won a game.
Yeah, it's funny. No, I tweeted this, and I just didn't. It was like kind of an incomplete tweet. I said basically saying I don't know how people bet on the Lions. And like what I meant is I understand the numbers are numbers, and you got to bet bad teams. I just couldn't watch them and bet on it. Right? Like I could bet on it. I just couldn't sweat out games because Dan Campbell's just in over his head. He's botching timeout. It's just a mess. I'm all for taking bad teams and like, you know, taking points. I mean, I know that's the name of the game. So what I said is I don't know how people bet on them and like sweat it out like that. That just doesn't feel like an enjoyable experience.
Well, the flip side is laying points on the road with Andy Dalton, which is never a fun experience either.
Seriously. Another game on Thanksgiving, the big one, the most talked about one was the middle game. Cowboys go down 36-33. Raiders win it in overtime. This was maddening because I lost my survivor because of this game, but I just – there were so many things like the DPI at the overtime that set up the game winning field goal. I thought was bogus. There were a couple other plays, but you know, the Cowboys weren't sharp. They had no sense of urgency, and the Raiders certainly did.
And you weren't the only one who got knocked out in Survivor from that pick in the circuit pool, which And that one, you have to pick a game on Thanksgiving. But 60% of the people that were still alive in that pool picked the Cowboys. So a lot of carnage in that pool. And the Eliminator Challenge on ESPN.com, only 6% were on the Cowboys, but for somehow 36% were on the Bears. So I don't know. They were the most popular pick in ESPN. So that was kind of odd. But in the sharper pool, like circa 60% were on the Cowboys. So those were all knocked out. Big loss there for Eliminator Challenge and a rare ATS loss for the Cowboys as well.
I know. It really bummed me out. I was on a teaser, too. I just, you know, the Raiders look, you know, they came to play. I will give them credit. They looked like they had folded a few the last couple of weeks, but they came to play. So let's go to yesterday's action. We just covered, you know, we talked about the Patriots already, but certainly some other games. I feel like this Bucs-Colts was a pros versus Joes, and the Bucs really should not have won by seven. I think Fournette should have fallen down. But either way, you know, the Squares got that cover, and I was on the Colts. I loved the Colts and did not cover.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Leonard Fournette scoring a touchdown at the end to cover the 3-point spread that fluctuated between 3 and 3.5 all week. So that was a really key touchdown from Fournette. 1 of 4 on the day for him. The Bucs' first ATS win on the road this year. They're now 1-5 against the spread on the road. They trailed by double digits at halftime in this one. It's Tom Brady's 32nd career double-digit comeback win, most by any quarterback since the NFL merger, as you would expect, since he's the greatest quarterback of all time, and he's playing until his mid-40s, so he's got a bigger sample size and all that. Brady now up to 30 passing touchdowns on the year, 3 more than anybody else. First one to 30. He's second in yards behind Carr. He's the +250 MVP favorite. Seems like nobody wants to step up and win this MVP award. Tom Brady didn't exactly have a great game in this one, but I still have to think that he's the favorite right now, rightfully at +250 right now. And they get Atlanta next week. So as somebody with a Tom Brady MVP ticket, I'm hoping that he can rack some stats up in that one.
Yeah, I know. I have 8-1 right now. I'm going to do my column later today. I really need to crunch sort of the schedule and the timing, everything. It's going to be a fascinating race and how it all plays out because there's so many sort of contenders. And thankfully, we have the Jonathan Taylor buzz of MVP only lasted a couple of days. We can put that one to bed like I talked about last week. Just he's not going to win. I just can't imagine it.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another big game. Packers, Rams. Stafford banged up. There was a report that he looked limited, but this line kind of puzzled me. Green Bay does not get the respect from the market as it should in my eyes.
I tend to agree with you. I mean, and I say that as somebody who was on the Rams in this game, just because I look at them on paper and I just look at them as the better team on paper. But, you know, the game is played on the field and Matt and LaFleur now 9-0 outright and against the spread after a loss as the Packers head coach. Packers are getting 2.5 in this one. Aaron Rodgers is a home dog, 5-1 against the spread, 4-1-1 outright, 5-1-1 ATS if you include the playoffs. And the Packers improved to 10-2 against the spread in the season, the best mark in the NFL. Maybe they'll start to get some respect. As I said, I was against them this week, which I regret doing, obviously, but though I got them at Pick'em, so I guess I got some closing line value on that one. And this was one of the first weeks where I've actually seen Sean McVay getting some criticism in the media. I mean, I know it came a lot on that running call they had on 3rd and 1 late in the game where the clock was running. They had to kick a field goal as the clock was running, which basically they weren't going to win anyway, but that basically ruined any chance they had of getting those two scores. But McVay as an in-game coach is not quite as good as his reputation.
I've been writing about the Packers for a while, and finally they're single digits, so they're +750 now to win it all. Before they were like 10-1, 11. I'm like, are we sleeping on this team? Like, what's going on? Of course, they lost last week to the Vikings, so good bounce back for the Pack. You mentioned LaFleur and his record ATS off a loss. The other big game, and the Vikings beat the Packers last week, was this Minnesota-San Francisco game. Yet another one-score decision for Minnesota. 10 of their 11 games have been decided by one score, losing end again. And they've been, what is it, winning all of them by like at least 7 or something like that? So they lose by 8 here.
Yeah, the 49ers have been on fire right now. I heard some people that were pretty sharp saying that the Niners were a decent Super Bowl long shot at 50-1 last week. I saw 40-1 yesterday. I mean, they're still going to have to go on the road and likely win 3 games, since they're definitely not going to win that division with the Cardinals having such a big lead and the Rams also ahead of them. But the 49ers are getting hot at the right time, though. We'll see the status of Deebo Samuel going forward, because he means so much to that team. But like you mentioned, every Vikings game seems to go down to the wire. This was actually one of the bigger margins of victory all season for them at 8. I had them +3, so that didn't come through for me, though. I like the +100 on that one. Vikings dropped a 5-2 against the spread as an underdog, just because usually when you get points with Minnesota, the way they play games, that's usually been a profitable bet this year, but not this week. And my favorite note entering the week, which did not come through too, was Kyle Shanahan as a home favorite. He had lost 9 in a row outright, which was the longest streak by any coach in the Super Bowl era before this game. But San Francisco gets it done as a home favorite this time against Minnesota.
Yeah, you mentioned some in-game decisions. The Vikings on 2nd-and-1 when the Niners are driving, trying to bleed the clock, committed an offsides, and really Shanahan should have declined it. Because 2nd-and-1, I mean, it's just you're going to get that first down and then keep the drive going. So it's an extra down that you basically just – they basically conceded, right? Like when they committed the penalty. So that, you know, we learned that with Vrabel, I think, did that first and learned, you know, to kind of save your timeouts, just give up the 2nd-and-1. You're not going to stop them back to back typically. But that was an interesting sequence there. But then the Niners missed the field goal anyway. That could have made it a 2-possession game. It was like 40 something yard. And then the Vikings tried to drive and then obviously got turnover on down. So that game was exciting for sure. Sunday night was interesting. It was a terrible played game in a lot of ways. End of the first half had multiple turnovers, pretty trash sequence there. But it was a Ravens-Browns rivalry game. Lamar Jackson did some things. Baker Mayfield did not do some things. And the Ravens cover 3.5, depending on when you got it.
Yeah, but people are ripping Baker Mayfield, and rightfully so after that game and his performance the last few weeks. He's clearly playing injured, not playing well at all right now, but he's also not getting a whole lot of help offensively either. They drop a lot of passes for him. Their receiving weapons are pretty bad as is. Jarvis Landry's been letting them down a couple times late, but Lamar Jackson with 4 interceptions in this one, you would think that this might be a chance where maybe he can stake a claim to the MVP. He's been getting some MVP hype this year, but 4 interceptions is not going to help his case there. He's the first quarterback to win despite 4 interceptions since Andy Dalton back in 2013. And the Ravens improved to 5-1 at home. They're the only team in the AFC that hasn't lost multiple times at home this year. And one cool Ravens note I saw from Stats Perform on Twitter, they are the first team in the NFL history to win a game with fewer than 14 points, fewer than 325 yards, and throwing at least 4 more interceptions than their opponent. They've been 0-275-1 entering that game. Wow. So this is not a repeatable formula for the Ravens, but they were able to get it done against the Cleveland team that's really struggling on offense.
Couple surprising results. I would say the Bengals' dominance of the Steelers. Yes, they were favored. I knew some sharps were on Pittsburgh in the points. 41-10 and just complete domination.
And that was a tricky line. It closed at 3.5, but the Steelers' perception, I think, was improved a lot based on how they ended that Chargers game the week before. Because if they were getting blown out for most of that Chargers game, then they wake up in the fourth quarter. If they hadn't woken up in the fourth quarter in that game, that line might have been 6, 6.5. I don't know what would have been, but it definitely would have been more than 3.5. So it turns out that might have been a little bit of a mirage late in that game, because Pittsburgh did not show up in this one. Bengals sweep Pittsburgh for the first time since 2009. It's their biggest win over the Steelers since 1989. And Pittsburgh now, it doesn't get any easier for them. They're home dogs next week against Baltimore. Big Ben's 8-2 outright as a home dog in his career. Already won once this year against Denver, but it's really hard to back that team. But, and again, the way the Ravens have been playing, especially as favorites, it's hard to back them as a favorite. So that'll be an interesting game next week.
Yeah, so they grind one. And then the other really surprising result, honestly, was the Giants stopping the Eagles and winning outright 13-7. I liked Philly in this. I thought the matchup of being able to run against this team and all this. But, you know, we learned the NFL. It's kind of, you know, think what you'll take what you last saw and think the opposite. But the Giants, it was a surprising win. I'll just put it that way.
Well, like you said, this is like a this is exactly what you just said. This is take what you just saw and play the opposite, because the Eagles have been flying high entering this game. People have been talking about, oh, maybe Jalen Hurts is the long-term answer. They switched their offense to run the ball a lot more. Personally, I thought it was a little bit much for them to be laying over a field goal on the road against the Giants. I don't think the Eagles are that much better than the Giants. You had to really think that you had to really believe in how their running game has been succeeding over the last few weeks. And even still, I don't think they're the type of team to let to cover a big number against. And the Giants are a bad team, but they're not like a putrid team like Detroit or Jacksonville or Houston right. or the Jets. So it seemed kind of like a sell high spot on the Eagles for me. So I was on the Giants in this game. Giants are usually a bad pick as a home dog, covering only 32% of the time in the last 5 years. But they've now won three in a row outright as a home dog. They beat the Panthers. They beat the Raiders. And now they beat the Eagles. And Eagles are back in the stadium next week against the Jets as a 7-point favorite. So they get to stay in MetLife next week.
That's interesting. Obviously, it's a short commute. They're not going to stay on the East Coast like we do or stay on the road like we see some teams go from West Coast to East Coast. Niners, I think, have done that a couple times. But that is kind of just quirky that they play in the same stadium back-to-back weeks. I thought Carolina was pretty weak, and the Dolphins pounded them. I got burned on a live line. Anybody who saw the end of the first half can chuckle. Dolphins have the ball. They fumble. Carolina returns it, and they're like, with 1 second left, they're in field goal territory. And Carolina kicks a field goal, and I was laying 13.5, I believe, on a late live first half line. Just a ridiculous sequence. I thought I'd share the bad beat there. But 33-10, Dolphins starting to find their groove a little bit, looking a little bit like the team many expected entering the season.
The one thing with the Dolphins, too, is that their four-game win and cover streak, it coincides with the NFL trade deadline because – as you'll know, with the Dolphins all season, it's been, are they going to trade for Deshaun Watson? Are they going to trade for Deshaun Watson? So since those Watson rumors have not really gone away, but kind of subsided since the trade deadline's over, that's when their winning streak happened. Now, obviously, it also coincides with them playing a very easy schedule, and that easy schedule continues the next two games as they face the Giants and their Jets with a bye week in the middle. FPI only gives them a 4% chance to make the playoffs just because it doesn't really believe in the Dolphins being all that good right now, but you know, Miami's on fire. Takes Brian Flores off the hot seat. Everybody entering this year thought Flores was one of the better coaches in the NFL. Then after their slow start, the bloom comes off the rose entirely with Flores, but a big stretch for him to maintain his job security. But Cam Newton in this game, just 5 for 21 passing, the worst mark by any quarterback with at least 20 attempts since Joey Harrington back in the day. So never good to be in the same company, at least in an NFL comparison with Joey Harrington. Cam Newton, 4-10 outright, his last 14 starts as a favorite. And he's lost, I believe, 8 in a row as a favorite with the Panthers, too. So Cam bloom off the rose with Cam Newton as well. So I saw a lot of people on Carolina in this game. I was on Carolina against Washington. They burned me pretty significantly in that one. But Tua Tagovailoa played pretty well. He's eighth in QBR in the season, despite the Dolphins having one of the worst pass blocking lines in the NFL, ranking last in pass block win rate. So maybe Tua can be the long term answer there. But again, we'll see once the Dolphins start playing tougher opponents. But again, that won't come until a little bit later in the season.
Yeah, I haven't understood this whole Cam Newton thing. I was on Washington a week ago for Dog of the Day. And, you know, just not that sold on his being back, if you will. One final game to discuss. Broncos, Chargers, Denver looking a little bit like the team that started the year. They improved to 6-5. Chargers had their opportunities. Herbert just kind of made some bad decisions, and give credit to the Denver defense for sure.
First time in Justin Herbert's career, he throws two interceptions in the fourth quarter. And Teddy covers 24-7 against the spread as an underdog now. So Bridgewater continues to get it done in that role. Usually we like him as a road dog instead of a home dog, but still taking him as a dog in any spot has been profitable throughout his career. Denver now 9-2 to the under this year. They've been one of the best under teams in the NFL this year. Chargers have failed to cover 5 of their last 6 games. Every time you think the Chargers are ready to take a step forward and claim first place in the AFC West or stake a claim for a playoff spot, they seem to fall flat in their face. So tough loss there for the Chargers.
Yeah, I know. It is funny because they have such upside, and then they've had some big wins, right? And then they do something like this, and it's like, gosh. You know, I worry about – I thought they'd had some interest like a while ago, 25-1 to win it all, but Yeah, I think they're a team that's just not going to kind of put it together on a run of multiple wins. You mentioned the Niners are still 40-1 at Caesars. I've talked about the Colts to win the conference in the past at 30-1. Obviously, this win would have been big, but it did not get there. Some of those long shots, like even the Bengals at 30-1, intrigues me.
The AFC is wide open right now. It's hard to really have much faith in any one of these teams. I still believe in Buffalo the most. I mean, I don't want to believe the Patriots are the best team. It's still hard to think that after last year's performance and the way they looked earlier in the season with a rookie quarterback, that the Patriots are the best team in the AFC, but they'll have a chance to prove it on Monday. But I would still favor Buffalo in the AFC race. But one bet that I kind of like, which kind of speaks to the wide openness of the AFC, is the NFC is pick them to win the Super Bowl over the AFC. And I kind of like the NFC at that price. I like the top few teams in the NFC over pretty much any team in the AFC. I think the Bills would be the one team that I would be concerned about not getting good line value in that one. But if the Bills don't win it, I'll take pretty much any team in the NFC over the top few teams in the AFC.
Yeah, no, for sure. The Bills are the most, I think, steady team. But, I mean, losing at Jacksonville, I can't get that out of my head. And they've had some head-scratching performances. And we'll see. But they are plus 375 to win the conference. That is the favorite right now. Excuse me, the Chiefs are the favorite at plus 325. Nice win over Dallas. We're going to learn a little bit more about the Chiefs. But I think books are a little concerned right now, for sure.
Totally agree. But yeah, Chiefs, I left the Chiefs out of that discussion as well. I mean, and Patrick Mahomes too. I mean, we were both on Mahomes entering the year in the MVP conversation with everybody else falling on their face. You know, Mahomes, I believe he's 8-1 right now. So our 5-1, 6-1 odds we got before the season, they're not looking so bad right now. He's fourth so in the bad, odds.
Exactly. Rodgers has climbed the ranks, plus 550. But yeah, Brady clear favorite right now, plus 250, like you mentioned. Tonight, Seattle and Washington, a little bit of a high total, 47.5. We'll see if the Seahawks offense can actually get going. The offense has been the issue the last couple of weeks. We'll see if they can get back on track against a Washington defense that, you know, obviously can give up some points. I feel like I got to watch this game and bet it live before I get involved. I have no idea what's going to show up for Seattle's offense. I'm not too optimistic on them, even though Washington's defense is bad, but I can't also take Washington to pick. They're just not that strong. I don't trust Heineke.
Well, this is one of those games. It's like you look at the line and you're like, oh, wow, Russell Wilson at Pick'em against Washington. Like, that looks like a great bet. And then the other hand, if you watch both of these teams play recently, you're like, wow, Washington, I don't have to lay points against this awful Seattle defense and this Seattle offense that has really struggled recently. Like, that looks like a great bet. So I'm staying off of this game entirely. Like you said, it's really hard to figure out these two teams. The Seahawks are 8-1-1 to the under this year, so they've been the best under team in the NFL. So if you do think the Seattle offense is going to continue to struggle, their unders have been very good this year. Russell Wilson's 10-2 outright in his career on Monday Night Football, but only 6-6 against the spread. But Washington, 0-8 outright and ATS in its last 8 Monday Night Football games. Now, they did win on a Monday last year after a game got pushed back due to the pandemic and COVID testing and, you know, and all that. But that doesn't end the streak. So 0-8 outright in its last 8 Monday Night Football games for Washington. So, I mean, that's not a predictive trend at all, but it's still interesting to look at.
It is. No, it's for sure funny. It's that was the Steelers, right? That was when the Steelers were 11-0 and they had a game on Monday afternoon. And it was like a questionable spot the end of the first half. Steelers were up big, and then that got him on the board. I believe it was an Alex Smith led Washington game, but
that's correct.
Either way, it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. That drought continues for Monday Night Football tonight. That's going to do it for us in this edition of the Daily Wager Extra podcast. Appreciate everyone tuning in, subscribing, all that fun stuff. Of course, we have the daily podcast in and out in less than 10 minutes, and then the day of the show will be back Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern. So looking forward to reconnecting with everyone. I had the full week off. The guys returned this past Sunday morning, and we'll get back into the swing of things moving forward on TV starting tomorrow.